So good afternoon, everyone. Just wanted to let you know at the outset, that, as you saw at the beginning, probably when you checked in, that the meeting is being recorded. And so with the quorum, I can call the meeting to order, noting that fact, there are no proxies. And Shayla, I'm going to appoint you as recorder for the meeting. And we do have a new addition to our virtual activity. Let's see if we can pull up the flag. Okay. And we're gonna, okay, there we go. We're gonna start with a Pledge of Allegiance as we used to do when we were in person, and we're gonna try it now virtually. So join me together. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great, terrific. Thank you. Thank you for providing that patriotic moment for us. And officially now, welcome to our July 2021 business meeting. Shayla, would you do a roll call of the members?
Certainly, just like we're getting on the school bus for the field trip, please just answer with a hi or a here as I call your name and we'll run through this quickly, thanks. Vice Chairman Tenenbaum.
Yes, here.
John Finley, didn't see him yet, okay. John Fry, no. Rick Gonzalez.
Present.
Christopher King.
Here.
Luke Nichter.
Here.
Dave Vogt. Yep. Reno Franklin.
Here.
Oh, Mayor Simison.
Here.
Architect of the Capitol, Brett Blanton.
Here.
Anyone representing the Secretary of Agriculture? Didn't see anyone yet, okay. Representing the Secretary of the Interior, Caroline Henry.
Here.
Representing the Administrator of the General Services Administration, Beth Savage.
Present.
Representing the Secretary of Defense, is Richard Kidd with us? Not yet, okay. Representing the Secretary of Transportation, Colleen Vaughn.
Here.
Representing the Secretary of Homeland Security, Teresa Pullman.
I'm here, thank you.
Is anyone representing the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development? Kevin's not here, okay. Or the Secretary of Education representative. Representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Tony Costa.
Present.
And the President of the National Conference of State Historic Preservation Officers, Ramona Bartos.
Present, good afternoon.
And Eric Hine.
Present.
Oh, I saw Eric. Representing the Chairman of the National Association of Tribal Historic Preservation Officers, Valerie Grusing.
Valerie is here. I'm the Executive Director. Shasta could go on as our chair.
Is Shasta here with us? Okay, thanks, Valerie. Okay, and Richard Kidd is here. I see that on
can you, the- Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I relogged in because I couldn't. I was chatting away, but no one heard me. So thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you, Richard. Representing the chairman of the National Trust, Paul Edmondson.
Here.
And Betsy Merritt.
Yes, I'm here as well. Thanks.
Anyone representing the Secretary of Energy? Not yet. Representing the Chairman of the Council on Environmental Quality, Jomar Maldonado.
Here.
and the chairman of the National Alliance of Preservation Commissions, Corey Kigarise.
Here.
President of the ACHP Foundation, Catherine Slick.
Here.
And director of the Preserve America Youth Summits, Ann Walker.
Kayla, I saw that she had a note that she was here earlier, so.
Yes, okay. Great. Okay, Mr. Vice Chairman, that should be our
field trip. She's an attendee. I will add her as a panelist.
Hey, Sheila, thank you. And you can close the doors on the bus now.
Excellent.
Okay, so before we start, I just want to acknowledge that Christopher Coase, the principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy, will be joining us later in the meeting, and that we'll give him a chance at that time to introduce himself and say a few words. Christopher is the Department of Transportation's designee to the Council, to the ACHP. And now we have a couple of preliminary motions. I'm going to ask for a motion to adopt the agenda found in the meeting book.
So moved. This is Reno.
Reno, thank you. Okay, and I need a second now.
Second, this is Luke.
Luke, great, thank you. Okay, is there any, well, there would be no discussion on this one, I don't think. Let's call for a roll call. Let's call for a vote, a voice vote in this case, okay? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Yay. Any opposed? Great. All right. The motion is carried. And the second preliminary motion, I need someone to make a motion to adopt the minutes from the April business meeting, which are in everyone's book materials. Do I have someone to make that motion?
So moved.
And that was?
Beth.
Beth, okay, Beth, thank you. Do we have a second?
This is Ramona Bartis, I'll second that.
Ramona, thank you, seconded by Ramona. Let's have a voice vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, all opposed. And the motion is carried. Okay, so let's begin with our agenda. And let me also say at the outset, that I encourage everyone to participate. We have a number of committee reports as we get through our meeting, and you're familiar with that. And please, this is a great opportunity for us to hear from you and for you to make your comments known. So certainly encouraging that. So I'm gonna give you a brief run through of some of my activities since I was made acting chairman and performing the duties of the chairman. That occurred on June 11th, at the same time that I was designated the vice chair and appointed to a second term. And I wanna begin with the most important thing, and that is to thank my predecessor, Rick Gonzalez, for the outstanding work that he did as vice chair following Chairman Giorgiani's resignation. And not only the great work he did then, Rick, but the great work you're continuing to do as an expert member. Thank you, we all are indebted to you. As you said many times, you're trying to fill these shoes. Well, I'm gonna try to fill your shoes too, but it's not gonna be easy. So thank you for your service. Thank you for stepping up. You're terrific. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jordan. Just remember we're here temporarily, right? So we can't get in trouble.
Try not to. That's right. Yeah, we're going through acting chairman at a prodigious rate. Okay. The next item, the Save Oak Flat Act. I just want to thank all of the members and the staff, of course, for their work in teeing up the last month that an unassembled meeting to get the members' approval to write in support of the Save Oak Flat Act. Letter was sent by me to the Senate committee and House leadership a few weeks ago following that approval. Thank you all for your participation in that. And I want to note next that we don't often weigh in on site-specific legislation, but since this one has a direct bearing on our comments to the Secretary of Agriculture on resolution copper in March, it was appropriate that we did so. And I think you would all agree with me. Again, this is an opportunity to acknowledge, Rick, your leadership in getting that Save Oak Flat Act teed up and approved, and that letter sent from the council. So thank you. Okay, the next item, how I spent my time in the little over a month since I've been vice chair, acting as chair, participating in a number of meetings connected with America 250. And as you probably know, because many of you are involved with this, the America 250 initiative is being led by a number of non-federal and federal stakeholders, and we're developing plans for commemorating America's 250th anniversary in 2026, which will be here before we know it, probably. We're participating in a number of committees. There were two meetings that I attended. One committee was the Policy and Legislation Work Group, and the other was the Volunteerism, Friends Groups, and Recruitment Working Group. So we are certainly focused on the committee dealing with historic preservation, and it really gives us, in my opinion, a chance to highlight the work that we're doing in history and the places that commemorate that history, and to tell our collective stories, good, bad, and otherwise. And we do that, of course, in conjunction with this. And I think I'd also like, because I've been associated now with the council for a number of years, and I've been very pleased and proud that this agency has been engaging the tribal voice. I think we've always made that very, very clear. And we will, of course, I know, continue to advocate for constructive involvement of tribes in this process. That is very important. As we've said many, many times, it's not really a celebration, this is a commemoration. And we need to look at American history in all its, as I said, in its good and its bad moments. Okay, and I think that there also are opportunities to pursue broader goals and interests, such as policy and possibly even legislative improvements. So this is still a ways away, and in the near future, I will report on these opportunities and the progress that were being made, perhaps even discuss whether the council can get legislation out there proactively, and certainly perhaps support other activities in that area. But for now, ideas to highlight and advance the preservation agenda are still taking shape. And so we're really still in a formative stage. I believe all of you have received a copy of the MOU for the 250th, and I will be signing that on Monday doing so in the Library of Congress and the librarian's office. And certainly that, as you have read that, it certainly advances the goals of America and states forth the goals of America 250. So if you have any questions, if you have any comments, suggestions, please, I'm always interested in hearing from you, Reed or Drew, Null, who's staffing this. Please let us hear from you in that regard. Okay, how else have I been spending my time? Well, first let me say thank Val for advising me and preparing me and continuing to prepare me for my participation in the White House Council on Native American Affairs, which has been reconvened under this administration to honor and improve our government-to-government relationships that we have with Indian tribes. Val, you have been very critical to my quick orientation in that regard, and I thank you publicly. Just to let you know a little bit about this group, the council serves on a number of subcommittees under that council, that White House Council. The meeting coming up will be next week on August 6th. There is a lot to do now that this group has been reconvened, and I look forward on your behalf to playing an active role in the council as we've done in the past. Very, very pleased to see this. I think it's a very important activity that has come, been renewed. Also, I have an upcoming meeting with Christine Harada, the newly appointed Executive Director of the Federal Permitting Improvement Steering Council. We are a member of that, and that meeting is taking shape to occur in early August. Thanks to and under his direction, Ann Blythe, under Reed's and Blythe's leadership, we've been an effective and very engaged member of the Permitting Council since its inception. And I look forward to continuing those efforts to improve federal environmental reviews, to advance, among other things, the administration's efforts to improve our nation's infrastructure. This is certainly going to see a lot of attention as we move forward and watch the progress of the whole infrastructure initiative. So that's how I've been spending my time and look forward to continuing to keep this chair warm as we move forward to get a full-time chair. So let's move on to that. And let me report briefly on the status of that activity. So Professor Sarah Bronin was nominated by the president, by President Biden. I'm sure you've seen this, and so it was sent out to all the members on June 24th. Her nomination was sent by the White House to the Senate on July 13th. And on that very same day, the nomination was referred to the Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. The good news here is that all of her paperwork is in, and our staff is communicating with the committee staff. As you know, given the calendar, the Senate calendar, there is a recess that will be taken. So the hearing has not been scheduled yet, and it's probably likely that it will not be scheduled until after that recess. Congress leaves on August 6th, and they return in mid-September. So I think we're looking at that hearing occurring after that date, probably late September, maybe October. So that is the status. And Reed, would you now report on what's happening in terms of some of the staff activities, particularly recruitment, and also any reopening plans that are in the mix?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I appreciate that. My report will be brief. I wanted to also just acknowledge, in part because the Vice Chairman reminded me of the positive numbers that we announced earlier, that that we did receive a pass back from the administration in the order of $8.255 million, which was about an 11%, a little more than 11% increase over the current year. The House has stuck with that same number, and so we're hopeful that we'll see that increase perhaps more once the Congress finishes its work and agencies are receiving their funding for next year. On that note, we are, as the Vice Chairman indicated, in the process of recruiting for and actually starting to get prepared to do interviews for the Assistant Director for Federal Property Management position within our Office of Federal Agency Programs. You might recall Tom McCulloch, who had been in that position for many years, retired after 36 years with the ACHP. So we're working to fill his big shoes there. I also wanted to just acknowledge that we're sort of about in the same place in hopefully scheduling interviews soon on a second National Park Service liaison to be within the Office of Federal Agency Programs. And to our friends at the Park Service and Interior, thank you for your support of a second position there as well. I did want to just also briefly acknowledge that we, I think, like all other federal members on the phone or on the Zoom here today, are beginning our plans for reopening. I think probably many or most or all of you are aware that the administration has been giving sort of piece by piece guidance and advice to agencies on, you know, what a reasonable reopening process looks like. At this point, we are tentatively aiming for reopening likely starting in early October. That's not a hard and fast date. There is certainly some flexibility. But I just wanted to acknowledge that we are working on those plans. Of course, the Delta variant poses many questions to all of us and whether that might affect those reopening plans. And the timeline is a question, I think, on all of our minds, and it's the answer to that remains to be seen. But as of now, there are sort of tentative plans to begin a sort of a gradual reopening process in early October. I want to underscore, though, that even when we do reopen, us being open will likely look quite different because we and many and most or just about all, I think, federal agencies are also reevaluating our telework plans. And I think one of the things the pandemic has taught us is that we not only carried out our duties very effectively during the pandemic, I think once we sort of got our feet under ourselves after the first month or so. But frankly, I think in many ways, our operations became even more timely and more effective. So we've learned to operate from a telework environment, I think, quite effectively. And so as we reopen, understand that it will be under a new telework policy that will allow significantly more telework to the staff within the ACHP. So reopening will begin gradually in October. And once we reopen, I think that it'll be the case that far fewer people will be in the office at any one time. So stay tuned. These plans are still taking shape, but I just wanted to let you know that we are working on them like all other federal agencies. Mr. Vice Chairman, that's my report.
Reed, thank you. And are there any questions on the Vice Chair's report or on the Executive Director's report before we move on to an item that has permeated every committee that met last week? And that's very, very significant for us to deal with. Definitely a priority. Any questions?
Hey, Jordan, this is Reno.
Reno,
I just want to take the time to thank Rick. You know, anytime you have these transitions that are like fast, right, in and out, and then all of a sudden it starts over again, just want to, you know, acknowledge on behalf of tribes, Rick, you taking the ball and running with it, doing your best to protect Oak Flat, and doing a nice handoff to Jordan. So I think that, you know, that you need to hear that from me. So just a quick thank you.
Thank you. Here. Thanks, Reno. Any other comments? Okay, then let's move on to climate change and adaptation. As I said, this in the committee meetings that were held last week, at least three of the four committees focused very heavily on this area, on the climate change and its implications for historic preservation. I want to acknowledge the administration's focus on climate change, and it really gives us an opportunity and the imperative, more importantly, to help better define how climate change and response or mitigation activities can affect historic properties, and to really assist the administration and others in addressing these very, very serious effects. And at the outset, I want to acknowledge the leadership of the Secretary of the Interior and the Chair of the Council on Environmental Quality, the leadership that they have and continue to provide on this very important topic. And just like to ask if Caroline or Jomar want to say a few words about their efforts in this regard. Caroline?
Sure. Thank you, Jordan.
Yep.
I just wanted to bring everybody up to date on where our climate action plan stands and what will be some of the highlights of that. A lot of this has been talked about before, and it's, you know, been long coming, but the action plan is now in its final draft. It's made it through CEQ and OMB review and is doing a final victory lap, if you will, inside Interior. And we expect the secretary to sign it out and approve it next month. So that's sort of the timeline on it. Just in terms of content, I know the questions are going to come up about, you know, how it dovetails with other agencies' work and with the priorities of the council and activities of the council. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit. The plan will identify what are being called five vulnerabilities. I suspect there's a lot of consistency across agencies on this. For us, those vulnerabilities are people, communities, and cultural resources is number one. Number two is healthy watersheds and water supplies. Three is biodiversity and ecosystems. Four, coastal and marine resources. And four is infrastructure and facilities. So one in five, you can see dovetail the most significantly with historic properties issues. I'm going to go through this kind of fast because I don't want to take up an enormous amount of time, but I also want to highlight that under those vulnerabilities are identified, and then subsequently adaptation actions are identified in the plan. And there are also five of those, and under those is where implementation strategies fall. And that will be present the opportunity for partnership and collaboration with other federal agencies. That will mean resource sharing in some cases, because there are commitments imagined that are beyond current department resources, or at least the projected FY22 budget from the White House. So we're looking at a whole of government approach in order to meet these, to act on these implementation strategies. So that's sort of where things stand at this point for us. And obviously there's a lot of detail in the plan about these implementation strategies that will be of interest to lots of folks. I can't go into them yet because it's not final, but hopefully within a month or less, it will be official and on the street, and we can dive a little deeper into that.
Thank you, Caroline. Thank you. Gilmar, for CEQ.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. We at CEQ have the other end. We are reviewing all the agency's climate action plans. Our Office of Sustainability has been providing input together with OMB on those plans as they come along. We have reviewed, for example, ACHB's plan. Thank you very much, ACHB, for providing that, as well as from the federal agencies like DOI. This is a critical time in this administration. It's priority number one. This and environmental justice are the heavily involved priorities together with the infrastructure. And we hope that a lot of the elements of the infrastructure package that is being coordinated right now and push are going to address some of these challenges related to the climate crisis, and as well as ensuring environmental justice throughout. We certainly recognize the impacts that climate change have on historic properties. We also recognize that some of the actions that we are taking, the administration is taking, the federal agencies are taking, will have some impacts as well. So it's two front, right? It's the effects of climate change itself, but also all the other actions that we're taking to adapt to that may have some effects to historic properties. One thing that I noticed on the meetings last week is there's a lot of questions or a lot of opportunities that the ACHP and the various committees want to explore in this area. And I would put forth any assistance that CEQ can have and provide to the advisory council, whether it's our sustainability office or our office of climate. We have a group that's working on emissions from industrial sources, from buildings, as well as from vehicles that are ready to assist in all your endeavors in making the connection to people, and so that they understand what is the implications, not just of climate change, not just for natural resources and culture, but also historic properties. One thing I wanted to note is I want to thank you, ACHB, for identifying members for the America the Beautiful work group that's coming up. America the Beautiful is a initiative that this administration is pushing forth to commit to the conservation or restoration of both resources and water to at least 30% of resources as well as waters by 2030. And we're standing up that group, work group, to go into the actual implementation of what those commitments will mean. This is a historic pledge that this president has made so early in his presidency, and it involves conservation of resources, but also conservation of and utilization of resources in a way that is smart, that protects tribal sovereignties, that takes into account inequities and try to correct those inequities, as well as to address the climate crisis. All these elements are all interconnected, and we're happy to have ACHB be an active participant in these conversations.
And I want to thank you for inviting us to be a member of the work group. Really appreciate it, Jomar, really appreciate it. Very, very important development for sure. So thank you, Carolyn Jomar. As I said at the outset, this whole area of climate change and adaptation has really been an overarching issue for at least three of our committees, the Preservation Initiative, Federal Agency Programs, and Native American Affairs. And what I'd like to do now is to call on the chairs of those committees to report on their deliberations on this particular topic and recommendations on how the council can best position itself to assist the administration, agencies, and others with climate change and its effects on historic properties. I'd like to begin, Rick, with you, if we could, to discuss this particular issue and how your what comments your committee had.
Thank you, Jordan. And I want to thank Jay and Reno for their help in the committee work too. We had a good discussion on the need to raise the awareness to the administration and Congress, you know, about what the things that, you know, historic places are facing right now. The ACHP has made the case to the administration already and of the creation of the Civil Climate Corps, and that's a good way. The other way to the America the Beautiful initiative and environmental justice activities. So we're hoping once we get our new chairperson, chairwoman in place, you know, she'll be able to get that message out to Congress quite quickly. We had consensus too on a couple of things I want to go over quickly, stressing the inherent energy efficiency and climate of historic buildings. I remember when I was young, 35 years ago, that the first thing I heard and caught my eye was the greenest building is the one already built. And that's my mantra, and I'm sticking to that. Emphasize also the need to consider climate impact on historic properties when addressing resilience and adaptation measures, and also mitigating the effects of clean energy development on historic properties. Very, very important sub-issues there. Another issue too, some of the policy issues, including the importance of investing in resiliency measures. You know, that's a very important topic down here in Florida. We just had our Florida Trust Conference last week, and that was all over the conference. It was great to be back in person, but it was great to hear multiple speakers address that issue. You know, how do we deal with our St. Augustine's and other places in Florida and around the country? And also also talking about the potential benefit of an executive order on climate and historic properties, how to address, manage retreat of communities and the unavoidable loss of historic properties. It brings to mind, as we spoke last week, of the danger that what happened in Germany recently, right, with the rivers and the horrible destruction of historic places in Germany because of climate change. And also considering all types of historic properties, right, from landmarks, individual properties to districts, and not just the buildings themselves, cultural resources, and other places. Note too that the PI committee supports the creation of a task force on climate change, and that was pretty much what we touched on, Jordan.
Okay, great. Any questions for Rick? Okay. Thank you, Rick. Thanks so much. Jay, would you like to report?
I had a question.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm trying to use the hand raising.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't see it. Sorry, Teresa. I see it now.
It's okay because with this group, we all are so excited we speak at once, right? I had a question though, and glad to hear the support for the working group. But Jamar, the group that you're talking about on the interagency, I know that it was tasked to a couple of federal agencies and one of the executive orders to put together an interagency working group to form the Civilian Climate Corps. Is that, I know that this is not really the same thing, but are you all going to be like subsumed into that group? I mean, this group that you're talking about, this working group, how is that going to work? And one of the reasons I'm asking is DHS is looking at forming our own Civilian Climate Corps. So I'd like to fit that in with whatever is going on within the administration, you know, because we're excited about climate. We want to get the word out there and integrate into business processes as soon as possible. So I just wanted to get how things are fitting together.
Sure. So the America the Beautiful is separate from the Civilian Climate Corps. The Civilian Climate Corps came about as part of the Executive Order 14008, and it did task, I believe it was Department of, I think it's the Department of Interior that is tasked to work on what that will entail. There are still some discussions on that. There's also discussions on the Hill on funding for such an initiative. So there is still a lot of things that have not been connected yet. So that really is an effort that is being led, I believe is by the Department of Interior. America the Beautiful is more focused on conservation and restoration of lands and waters in 30% by 2030. There is correlation. All these initiatives have correlation with one another, environmental justice, Justice 40, civilian conservation, but they are their own unique work stream, if you will. So this work group that we're talking about is its own unique work stream related to the conservation of lands and water.
Great. And Teresa, my apologies again for not seeing your hand. I'm now going to keep on. Yeah, but I noticed that Christopher Coase has joined us and we're delighted to welcome you and wondered if you just might say a couple of quick words to the group. Very, very glad that you could join us.
Thank you for that, Jordan. And again, it's a pleasure to finally join this council. I've worked with many of the members here in my previous role. For those who don't know me, I'm Christopher Coase, currently serving as the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy. I work very closely with my colleague, Colleen Vaughn, who's been a great representative for the Department of Transportation on this council. Prior to joining the administration, I worked very closely with a number of our, whether it's Trust and Main Street and so many other groups trying to protect not only historic properties, investing in historic properties, but also aligning a more equitable, just, and resilient communities with historic properties at a focal point of that. One of the things I will just say here, it is an exciting time at our department. As you may have heard yesterday, we just announced a bipartisan infrastructure deal that will, I think, from our vantage point as a member of this council, be able to have a very deep and enriching conversation about how we can reconnect communities that have been long either overburdened by historical investments or underserved, and how do we create and protect cultural historic sites. Also, how we can provide greater technical assistance and capacity to communities to address environmental justice issues, but of course, how do we modernize our roads and bridges? And so, as well as providing more affordable transportation and systems to create, again, a more resilient, healthy, prosperous communities with one of the best trade station systems in the world. And so again, thank you for the opportunity to just share a few thoughts from DOT. We're really excited to be a member and look forward to the conversation. And Jamar, it's good to hear you. I heard your entire presentation, which is why I kept my screen off because I didn't want to interrupt the conversation. But again, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Delighted you're here. CAC, you have your hand up.
Yes, and thank you for recognizing me, Chairman. The question I have, and it's sort of because Teresa started in on this, is the question that was, there was an article in the New York Times last week, I believe it was, and it was about Charleston and resiliency planning. And in that, the article cited that the DHS, FEMA, had the Biden administration had doubled the amount of money to go towards resiliency planning at the local level. And I just wonder how that fits into all of what we're talking about now. And maybe, I don't know, Christopher, whether you have any insight into how that money came up, or whether you're using that money, how that came about. But it seems to me that those are the kinds of initiatives we should be sort of thinking through what's happening with that and how does it fit into all of our plans for resiliency.
Yeah, I mean, that speaking for the department and FEMA, you know, this is for building resilient and infrastructure communities. You know, it's the BRIC program. And prior to this year, the minimal amount that was going into that was $500 million. And because of the emphasis on climate change and resilience, the administration doubled that emphasis, had a presentation by the FEMA administrator to our climate change action group a few weeks ago. And what we're trying to do, what they're trying to do is reach a larger portion of the communities within the United States with these grants. And a lot of it is for pre-disaster mitigation. Building resilient communities involves a lot of thinking about, you know, climate change, what could happen, fires, earthquakes, floods, how do we prevent that? A lot of it has to do with flood insurance programs, that kind of thing. We are definitely at the department, we are definitely putting that into our resilience and climate action planning. And so FEMA has that program. We also have others within the department that have not as big dollar programs, but we also have others within the department that we are definitely incorporating into it. It's a great deal of money. These communities deserve the right to be heard and deserve the right to get the money and to become resilient, so that part of it too is build back better, like the president says. You know, don't just build back what you had before, because if you're in a floodplain and your building got flooded in the same location, are you going to build back the same thing? Well, it really wouldn't be wise to do that. So there's a lot going on within the BRIC program right now. The decision was just reached a few weeks ago. You're right, Kat, you know, and I know that they're rethinking and reformatting the application process, trying to streamline everything for the communities out there to get the money where it's really needed quickly.
Great. Thank you, Teresa. I see Luke, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Just a quick comment. I was going to mention the Charleston article, and if members haven't read this already, I just would like to draw it to their attention. It was in Sunday's Times, just because it's really a stunning example, I think, of where climate change meets the mission of the ACHP. And it just raised so many questions that in effect were in a way transformative to my own thinking in terms of, you know, is this the future of so many stuff? But also it raises that unanswered question about, you know, this is an example of the sites that you know, have the funding to make these modifications. And what about the many others that do not? So to me, it just raised so many interesting questions. It's highly visual. It's easy to really get a grasp at some of the underlying issues here. So I won't go on any longer than that. We're tight on time. I left a link in the comments.
Great. Thanks, Luke. Thank you. Okay. John. Please.
Thank you. If it's out of turn, let me know. But I did have a question about the section that dealt with the Office of Federal Agency Programs. Is that out of turn, or is that we're on that now?
We're just about to go. Jay is just about to report on that.
And let me wait till after Jay's report, and you'll come back to me if the answer is not, if it's not answered.
Okay, then Jay, you are on.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. The Federal Agency Programs Committee focused on how to highlight the links between natural and cultural resources. And we find and we know that there is far more of a connection of natural and cultural resources, especially for tribal governments, being exactly the same thing. So that's something important. We're also looking at the links with the priorities of federal agencies have in their climate change response and how we can be involved in that. We have the challenge of reacting to specific undertakings while climate change raises larger questions about where infrastructure, and I would say especially with historic properties, where infrastructure is maintained, planned, or abandoned. We believe project case studies would help federal agency staff and other decision makers understand the natural cultural connections and how climate adaptation work can benefit both kinds of resources. Federal agencies mentioned that programmatic approaches could help them. For example, climate adaptation for federal facilities, such as installing an electric fleet infrastructure, more of a, what I'd call it, we'd call a whole government approach to some of these situations. We acknowledge the importance of digital information, knowing where cultural and historic property resources are located, such as when renewable energy projects are proposed or when natural disasters strike. Knowing that information can help preserve those properties and have that into a digital format so it's easily accessible by both the SHPOs, the THPOs, as well as the federal agencies. And lastly, our members of the committee support the formation of a task force.
Great. Glad to hear that. Thank you. John, did that answer your question?
The question I had is that, you know, when I read through all the ways in which we want to affect the federal government, be integrated, be coordinated, be advocating on issues that affect historic and cultural preservation. There's some that are very specific to protecting a cultural site that is integrated with, for example, if you're going to put solar panels on a historic, how do you do that in a way that is workable? And then there are other things that, you know, if you're worried about Harriet Tubman's historic site, rising waters, it kind of affects every place in the neighborhood. I mean, it's not unique to that house. And some of the, and so I don't know if this is going to resonate, but some of the areas in which we, that are so very much directly on point, like sustainable design and federal undertakings, seems very specific to cultural historic preservation. And others seem, you know, they would have been applicable whether before or after climate. For example, emergency provisions, you know, there were floods and there were earthquakes before, and do you have like proper responses that relate to cultural sites? And so as we conceptualize it, are we prioritizing those that are very specific to how it's in a direct effect of climate that is specific to cultural, or really just more generally, because cultural and historic sites get affected like all sites get affected, and therefore we want to weigh in? And are we being as consciously precise to where we want to use our bang for the buck that's very specific to cultural historic sites?
Great. Jay, would you like to respond?
Well, I'll say that's a great question, and it's, yeah, you know, far more complex than, you know, a three sentence answer. But I want to say that, you know, first of all, they're right. A lot of these things have happened and will continue to happen, irregardless of climate change, or may get worse because of
of climate change. So I and part of it is that the Department of Interior already has a lot of guidance on how to approach some of those things. And I think what we really need to do is figure out, working with federal agencies, how which ones we need to approach first and go from there. Mm-hmm. We can't do everything all at once. And I I think that's part of what we're working with the staff on, figuring out, you know, we see a connection between natural and cultural resources and how we may approach some of those things and how can we work together. When somebody's solving one problem, we may be able to solve one of our problems at the same time.
Great, thank you. Reed.
Yeah, I would just say very briefly that I think John Finley hit the nail on the head. It's some of both, right? It's to help everybody understand that climate change that's generally affecting everything and everybody is also affecting historic properties, and to help everyone understand that linkage. And then I think, as you say, John and Jay and others, to come up with some specific advice and examples, if you will, on how agencies have dealt with the direct impacts to historic properties. And I would acknowledge as well that the Park Service has already already worked on additional guidance, if you will, on addressing, you know, steps that agencies may take to protect or harden or rehabilitate, what have you, other historic properties as well. So in many ways, it's sort of an all of the above.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Teresa and then Caroline.
So for us at the Department of Homeland Security, we've been funded in FY22 for electrification of the fleet. So we really need help as far as the programmatic approach, and we need help sooner than later as far as approaching these historic facilities and how do we treat them. Reed and I know that Reed has had several discussions with my staff, but the thing that we have here is we've got $77.6 million coming to the department in 22 that we have a spend plan for. Congress is looking to us to spend the money. OMB is looking, but we would like to see some kind of expedited effort in this way. I mean, you know, Reed, we're definitely willing to help and talk with you about it. Just really need some help from you guys. Thank you.
Great. Caroline.
Thank you. I wanted to note one thing about DOI's climate action plan that I didn't mention in my attempt to be brief, and that is that for each of these adaptation actions, a significant component of the plan also talks about what are called accomplishments. And these are the existing programs for the most part, either short-term or long-term programs in the department that address these areas. Many of these are programs that were put in place for disaster preparedness and so forth, but obviously have relevancy on a grander spectrum when applied to climate in general. So what you're talking about, these, you know, sort of the what's already there, getting the bang for the buck, making sure that we're applying these programs that are already there and adapting the programs themselves, perhaps, to current and evolving needs. So that is also part of what DOI is looking at.
Great. Rick.
I just wanted to share that Marty Hilton has been appointed the Chief Historical Architect on Climate Change and Adaptation, a new position at the National Park Service. And if you know Marty's work, he did the scanning and videotaping of Nantucket and St. Augustine and how they would transform over the next 10, 20, 30, all the way to 2100, and it's very frightening what the images show in terms of, you know, climate and water and damage. And also his position is wide open. He, you know, I mean, there's a lot of knee jerk going on around, you know, in terms of responses, you know, people haphazardly raising buildings on historic streets and creating a mess from doing that. So hopefully in his new position, he'll be able to work with us and with many, many others, you know, to bring it all into under a table, work with the National Trust and their work that they've done already and our association to try to make a smarter approach to dealing with historic places as climate changes. You might have also heard Miami, you know, Miami a 12-foot tall, 6-mile long seawall. That's completely impractical, you know? So a lot of issues. We're in a long emergency right now, and we got to get to do more than just talk and talk. We need to really, hopefully he will get a lot of things done, and we can hopefully work with him, Reed and Jordan.
And before we go on to any other comments, before we go on to Reno, I just want to underline one of the, Jay mentioned a task force, and I think that all these issues that we're talking about are exactly what this task force would begin to look at and would begin to discuss. So Reno, let's get your take on this issue on climate change and how your committee deliberated on it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mr. Vice Chairman, Acting Chair. Jordan, man, it's so cool to see you in that position. But yeah, we did. We met. We had our meeting was on July 22nd, and you know, we jumped right into discussions on climate change, which, as most of you know, I have been stuck in fire emergency operation centers for 3 weeks straight now, dealing with fires that are the size of states that are on the East Coast. It's just surreal. 334 square mile fires, you know, that are just impacting cultural resources, historic resources, and really just mental time and energy drains for those of us who are trying to do the right thing and protect sites during that. So we had a great discussion on it, and I kind of would just, you know, summarize it. You know, it was a very clear acknowledgement that Indigenous peoples, you know, around the world really, but especially for the purposes of our meeting, you know, here in the States, are dealing with climate change and, you know, the impacts from fires and floods and then now drought as well. You can see my son in the background who's dealing with a lack of something work. He's got to go to work. But I think that, you know, we also wanted to point out, you know, as we're addressing the lower 48, that we don't forget that, you know, Alaska is dealing with it, certainly. But we also remember to include American Samoa and, you know, and our brothers and sisters in Puerto Rico and Guam and all of the outlying territories, that we keep them in mind, that as we look at solutions that we you know, want to provide solutions and background and advocacy for our territories as well. I think the main takeaway, one of them was, you know, discussions around equity in terms of funding and other assistance to tribes and Native Hawaiians and, you know, and how we address those concerns when it comes to climate change. One of the examples that was brought up was around fires and how during fires, Tipo tribes have a good footing because one, they have highly educated or highly, you know, experienced staff who can deal with 106 issues when they're doing remediation and cleanup projects. And also that they have, you know, the ability to quickly respond and put people into the field. And if you're not Tipo tribe, you're likely not going to have that ability to do that. So, you know, and just looking for ways to be equitable in our funding and provide the same opportunities across the board for all of us that are dealing with these effects of climate change. You know, we reviewed the tribal resilience paper that was provided in our meeting book, generally agreed the overall aims and decided that staff will reorganize and tighten up some of the items, create a new plan or continue to build a new plan. And get that out to the committee members and then to all of you as well. We also agreed with other committees that the ACHP task force is needed. I mean, I always feel like I'm just kind of serving this one up, you know, like who doesn't want that tasty croissant, right? I'm obviously hungry. And, you know, there's a breakfast platter. Go for it, you know, because it's just an obvious yes on this one that, you know, the task force is needed. We need better suggestions, or at least suggestions from, you know, from our expert members and, you know, and our federal partners to come up with ways, solutions that are we can implement and use as stopgap measures in places that are needed. And also, you know, bring a focus of preventative and getting ahead of these things instead of being so reactive like we are. And that tends to be a huge problem, is that we're very reactive when it comes to the effects of climate change and our historic resources. And, you know, our brothers and sisters in Florida and New Orleans will tell you that, my God, these hurricanes have come and gone. And what have we done to be proactive since they've done their damage? And I think you'd probably hear quite a bit of cussing and maybe some hugging afterwards, but it hasn't been enough. So we talked about the possibility of bringing some of these ideas to the America the Beautiful initiative. And we think that there's resiliency portions within the ABI that are perfect for some recommendations from the think tank that is the ACHP, and that all of us as being experts in the field of preservation. And let's be honest, all of us that are experts in the field at this point of preservation after the disaster as well, that we bring a perspective to the table that could look at resiliency and look at ways to build in these types of historic preservation minded projects, minded policies, minded expertise points to make into the America the Beautiful plan. So, Mr. Vice Chairman, that's the 2-minute summary that I gave in 5 minutes of what we talked about at the Native American Affairs Committee.
Great.
Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Reno? Well, it is unanimous, gang. I think every one of the committees came up with a suggestion that we establish a task force. So I intend to do so. I'm going to meet with Rick and Jay and Reno to talk about this will be a task force of members, council members. And if anyone is interested in becoming a member of this group, please let me know, let Reed know. We'll be establishing a timeline, a charge for the task force. But thank you for your excellent presentations, for all the work. I attended every single committee meeting and was very, very, very pleased to see the depth that this committee has went to in terms of this issue. So thank you all. And if there are no more questions, CAC, please. You're muted, CAC. You're muted.
About the task force. In years past, it seems like other agencies have been observer agencies on the council. I'm not quite sure what it takes to be an observer agency, but it occurs to me that, for example, the NOAA represented commerce on the council. It might be useful to have an agency like NOAA, since climate and resiliency are part of their portfolio quite directly. In years past, it's EPA has been there. And so that might be a way to think about how you broaden some experience and bring them into the discussions might be.
Yeah, great idea. Excellent, thank you. Reed, we'll put that into the hopper. Yep, great. Okay, then moving on to our next item, historic preservation policy and programs. Rick, another thanks to you and to your partner, Drew Null, for the really great discussions about preservation initiatives and your committee meeting last week. And I know you have a couple of bills that you want to get our decision on. So without further ado, the platform is yours.
Thank you, Jordan. And let me just say thank you, a special thanks to Drew and to the whole office, the whole staff. I've really enjoyed working with them over the past year, Reed, Javier, but Drew in particular, she's my lifesaver, okay? So thanks, Drew, you're a magic. all right, so we did talk about three motions. We wanted to see about supporting the creation of the Civilian Climate Corps, an enhancement of the use of conservation corps. Our second one is we want to piggyback onto that surface transportation program reauthorization. And our third one of the favorites for people in the business, the rehabilitation of tax credits, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have, Drew, we have three motions, right, Jordan?
Yeah, three motions, right.
So are we to discuss them, or am I supposed to read them now, or?
Well, let's do it this way. Let's have, you will give the first motion, and then we'll look for a second, and then we'll have some discussion. And hopefully we will then have a vote. And I think in this case, maybe a roll call vote. Is that okay? So let's go with the roll call. Okay, so let's do the first motion.
I will also post the text of these motions in the chat. So as Rick's reading them, you can also see them in the chat.
Great.
You see how she's a genius? I mean, she reads everything in advance for us. Thank you, Drew. All right, motion number one.
Yes.
We move that the ACHP supports addressing the protection of cultural resources through the work of Climate Corps and Conservation Corps, and directs the chairman to advise the Congress of this support and to urge inclusion of specific references to cultural resources in Corps-related legislation.
Great, thank you. And do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, John. John has second. John Finley seconded. Is there any discussion? Okay, no hands. Okay, no hearing, further discussion. Yeah, oh, Rick?
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, we've been talking about cross-pollination, and this is an excellent example of how we can cross-pollinate and get our historic agenda on with other agendas, especially the critical climate change one.
Yeah, agreed, absolutely agreed. Okay, so hearing no further discussion, Sheila, if we could do a roll call vote.
Okay. And you are voting on the first motion. John Finley.
Yes.
Rick Gonzalez.
Yes.
Christopher King.
Yes.
Luke Nichter.
Yes.
Jay Vogt.
Yes.
Reno Franklin.
Viva Cuba and yes.
Mayor Simison.
Yes.
Architect of the Capitol, Brett Blanton.
Yes, if we call it core instead of corpse.
Caroline Henry, Department of the Interior.
Abstain.
Beth Savage, GSA.
Yes.
Richard Kidd, Secretary of Defense, Representative.
Yes.
Representing Secretary of Transportation, Christopher Coase.
Abstain.
Teresa Pullman, DHS.
Yes.
Kevin Bush, Housing and Urban Development.
Abstain.
Okay, thank you. Tony Costa, VA.
Yes.
Nick Shippo, President, Ramona Bartos.
Yes.
NAFPO Chairman Shastagon.
Aye.
And National Trust President Paul Edmondson.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Jordan Tannenbaum.
Yes.
Mr. Vice Chairman, it looks like this motion has passed.
Terrific. Okay, thank you, Sheila. Thank you very, very much. And on to the second motion, Rick.
Okay, the second motion, move that the ACHP supports current provisions in the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act, Senate 1931, investing in a new vision for the Environment and Surface Transportation, Invest in America Act, H.R. 3684, and the Surface Transportation Investment Act, S-2016, relating to the HPF, the ACHP Program Comment on Rail, ROW, R-O-W, Transportation Alternatives Funding, and Context-Sensitive Design, that's a favorite of mine, and supports including the provisions of the Historic Tax Credit Growth and Opportunity, HTC-GO, Act S-2266/H.R. 2294, as part of Surface Transportation/ infrastructure legislation and directs the chairman to advise the Congress of this support.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second, this is Luke.
Thank you, Luke. Okay, discussion. Yes, Beth.
Is there an SAP on this?
An SAP.
Statement of Administration Position Policy.
There is on some of them, but not all of them.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Sorry, my understanding is there is an SAP on some of these, but not all of them.
And could we identify which pieces there is and is not an SAP on?
The last
purpose of discussion.
Yeah, and I'd go further and say, what is the administration's position?
The last that I saw, there was a statement of administration policy on the House bill, the Invest Act, but not on the Senate bills. Now, of course, the administration is in support, has obviously shown support for the bipartisan bill that the Senate is now putting together, which will no doubt is going to include chunks of these Senate bills, but we don't have an actual text of that that new, you know, bipartisan infrastructure and or service transportation bill yet.
Thanks for the clarification.
Okay, other questions, discussion? Kevin, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I think I would just say, at the risk of being blunt, if you don't mind a bunch of abstains, we wouldn't need to change the motion, but if you wanted some yeses, you could probably split it up a little more.
I can say from my perspective, in a completely apolitical, nonpartisan job, without seeing the language, it's premature for me to opine.
Okay. So, do we want to redo, you know, do we want to amend the motion? Or would we like to collect some abstentions, which is what Kevin is suggesting? Reed?
I was going to suggest that if there are a number of federal members that are open to the possibility of voting affirmatively, but would benefit from seeing both the language and a clear sort of description of what the SAP, you know, which portions of these had an SAP and which didn't, I guess I would prefer doing that subsequently to today and better guaranteeing that this pass than seeing it fail today.
Okay. Then what we should do is withdraw the motion at this point or table it.
Yeah. And this is Javier. Rick, yeah. If you want to go ahead and say that you withdraw it, if no one objects, go ahead and do that, please.
Okay, if no one objects, I would like to withdraw the motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, hearing no objections, the motion is withdrawn. Okay, all right, Rick, let's try for the third.
All right, third and final. Everybody likes historic tax credits, right? So hopefully this one will go smooth sailing. I know I do. Motion number three. Move that the ACHP supports the Historic Tax Credit Growth and Opportunity, HTC-GO Act, Senate 2266/HR2294, and the intent of the Revitalizing Economies, Housing and Businesses Rehab Act, HR1483, and directs the chairman to advise the Congress of this support while expressing concern that the Rehab Act not unintentionally, discourage use of the existing tax credit for rehabilitation of historic structures.
Okay, do we have a second?
This is Jay, a second.
Okay, thank you, Jay. Discussion. Beth.
Same question as last time, please.
Okay, all right. Well, do we have a statement, Administrator?
No,
okay.
Yeah, as noted in the briefing book, there's no statement of administration policy on either of these yet.
Okay, so shall we take the same process as before and withdraw the motion and come back. Reed?
I guess I would first caution us to consider whether such a statement will be forthcoming anytime soon, and whether such a statement, you know, should it eventually come, be too late. In other words, you know, I think this has been a less controversial matter. While I acknowledge that the second motion that we just
Okay, you froze, Reed.
We may have a little bit of time to weigh in on that as bills forward. I think maybe it's worth talking now about whether a vote going forward now might make sense on this one. Javier, I know you wanted to add something to that as well.
Yeah, just one practical note for votes like this on legislation. All that is needed is a majority vote of those present and voting. The abstentions, I mean, don't count as a negative vote. They just count as a vote towards quorum. So you can have, just so you know, for practical purposes, you could have a vote that it's like 3 in favor, 0 against, and 13 abstentions that would pass. Just so you're aware that's how these things
work. Right, of course. Okay, thank you, Javier. Caroline.
That was actually going to be my question. I was going to ask somebody from legal, whether this could pass without any federal support.
Yeah. Okay, so let's give that a shot.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just for the group's purpose, in previous conversations I've had or shared through email with Reed and a few others, I'll either be abstaining or voting no on all issues where we are taking a position for or against any introduced bill. Because from my personal viewpoint in reading the charter of the ACHP, I think that goes beyond advising from my perspective. So just so people are aware that I will either be a no or abstention vote on all issues like this.
Okay, Ramona.
Since we're discussing sort of the logistics of the votes, I'd like to encourage that we go back to Rick's original or second motion regarding the Invest in America Act. That does deal with the Historic Preservation Fund's permanent authorization and doubling of the current amount. So I think that would be vitally important to our efforts to promote the National Preservation Program. If the other ones are those that folks can't come to a decision at this point, I can understand that. But to me, that one's a pretty fundamental one from our standpoint. Thank you.
Yeah. Reed, do you want to revisit that? Want to try?
I think that makes sense. The only reason that I entertained any other action was the suggestion that folks hadn't had a chance to see the language. But frankly, I mean, I think we've spoken about it extensively in the meeting book and at the committee level. So while I understand that maybe some are uncomfortable that they haven't had the chance to look at the language, I would be perfectly happy to go back to that and see that motion reintroduced. Let me also just say that even if we didn't have it reintroduced, I think Ramona makes a good point about the timing. I would want to move forward on these quickly, and maybe there is no better time than today.
Okay, then let's do it, Rick. I think you're up for that.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Thank you, Ramona. That's what I was going to suggest too. Both programs, Motion 2 and 3, that's a lot of money at stake, you know, and historic preservation. I mean, we're scrambling in Florida looking for money. So we should try to move as quickly as possible on these two and hopefully get as much support as we can today.
Okay, then let's see. So let's set number 2 up again. Rick had made the motion and seconded. Oh, whoops. Javier.
Nothing. I see that Paul Edmondson raised his hand. So, yeah.
No, everything that has just been said in the last minute, I think, was what I was going to say. I was totally in agreement with Ramona and agreement with Rick, not only just in terms of the funding, but particularly the HTC Go Act, which we think is extremely important. My understanding, it's in the House version of the bill in Congress, and I think I just understood that there was a saving administrative position in favor of the House position at least. So I would definitely like on behalf of the National Trust to see these two go forward.
Okay, then let's, Javier, okay, if we do have to introduce the, read the motion again, would that be?
Rick would just have to say that he moves again, similar okay. to what he did before.
I just saw him move, so I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, I'll second again. I'll second it again.
Thank you. Okay.
Great, okay, so let's, Shayla, if you can do the roll call.
Okay, so we are, we actually have two motions on the table right now, number three and number two. So Mr. Vice Chairman, would you like to go with number two?
Yes.
Okay.
I like chronological orders, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The transportation and et cetera. Okay, Mr. John Finley.
Yeah, so we're doing the resolution as originally proposed?
Correct.
Not just funding?
Correct.
Okay, I'll vote in favor.
Rick Gonzalez.
Yes.
Christopher King.
Yes.
Luke Nichter.
Yes.
Jay Vogt.
Yes.
Reno Franklin.
Trying to get off mute. Yes.
Mayor Simonson.
Epstein.
Brett Blanton.
Abstain.
Caroline Henry.
Abstain.
Beth Savage.
Abstain.
Richard Kidd.
Abstain.
Christopher Coase.
Abstain.
Teresa Pullman.
Abstain.
Kevin Bush.
Abstain.
Tony Costa.
Abstain.
Ramona Bartos.
Yes.
Shasta Gaughan.
Yes.
Paul Edmondson.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Tannenbaum.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Vice Chairman, a vote number 10 in the affirmative, so the motion passes.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you, thank you. All right, then let's go for number three. We're on a roll.
Okay, number three, this is the HTC Go Act and others. John Finley.
Yes.
Rick Gonzalez.
Yes.
Christopher King.
Yes.
Luke Nichter.
Yes.
Jay Vogt.
Aye.
Reno Franklin.
Yes.
Mayor Simonson.
Abstain.
Brett Blanton.
Abstain.
Caroline Henry.
Abstain.
Beth Savage.
Abstain.
Richard Kidd.
Abstain.
Christopher Coase.
Abstain.
Teresa Pullman.
Abstain.
Kevin Bush.
Abstain.
Tony Costa.
Abstain.
Ramona Bartos.
Yes.
Shasta Gaughan.
Yes.
Paul Edmondson.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Tannenbaum.
Yes.
Okay, and with the same number, 10, that motion also passes, Mr. Vice Chair. Okay,
great, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, thanks to everyone. Let us move on to, Rick, we're keeping you busy here. The next item is also one we'll ask you to report on, and that's the Amachi National Historic Site Act, which would designate the Amachi Japanese incarceration site as a national historic site. And Drew, do you wanna also report on the timing of this bill and the extent to which the, after Rick makes his report, which the council has considered commenting on site specific legislation in the past. But first, Rick, your report.
Thank you. Thank you, Jordan. So Ann Walker suggested this at the end of our committee meeting last week, that we might want to consider supporting this very important bill for the Amachi National Historic Site Act, which is being fast-tracked in Congress. The bill would establish a World War II era Japanese-American incarceration facility outside of Granada, Colorado, as part of the National Park System. And the committee, we didn't have enough information on hand to consider the bill at the meeting, but additional information was emailed. Hopefully you've all had a chance to take a look at that. The National Historic Landmark was designated in 2006. In 2013, the ACHP designated the Amatchie Preservation Society as a Preserve America Steward in recognition of its grassroots efforts to preserve and interpret the site. In 2019, Congress directed the Department of the Interior to conduct a special resources study to determine the feasibility of adding this site to the national park system. We understand that the Department of the Interior has worked with the House Natural Resources Committee on amendments to the bill, yet there's no official statement of administration policy on the bill.
Okay. Drew, would you kind of let us know about the timing of the bill and also some history on the council's consideration of site-specific legislation?
Sure. As actually, Vice Chairman Tannenbaum, you mentioned earlier, we don't usually weigh in on site-specific bills. But there are situations where it's really, really important for us to do so. And so in 2018, the ACHP basically adopted an internal policy that set out a couple criteria to consider for when we might indeed want to weigh in on a site-specific bill. And in this particular case, at least two of those criteria clearly fit. One is that the legislation addresses a highly significant historic property. As Rick was just saying, it's a National Historic Landmark and is being studied by the Park Service for potential use, adding to the park system. The other criteria is the legislation would advance a established ACHP policy goal. And clearly this legislation fits very nicely, and it would be in keeping with the council's attempts to build a more inclusive preservation program and make sure that preservation is telling the story of all Americans. So I think in terms of the policy, our own internal policy, weighing in on this site-specific bill, you know, would be completely appropriate. Ann Walker had mentioned that the bill is being fast-tracked, and it is moving pretty quickly, at least in the House. The bill came out of committee with some amendments, which, as I understand, I assume Caroline can speak to this, also that it did reflect some input from the Park Service. The bill went to the full House. On Monday, it was considered by the House. There was no acrimonious debate. There was just two basically bipartisan statements of support on the bill. And a voice vote was held on Monday, which indicated that that the bill was going to pass. What they did is then someone called for a roll call vote. And there's a rule in the House where you can postpone a roll call vote and kind of cluster it with some other bills later on, and that's what they did. So my understanding is that today, the bill, as well as this other cluster of bills, are due for a roll call vote. So I haven't had an opportunity to check. For all I know, they may have voted on it already, but it would appear that it is either happened or is imminent that the House is going to pass the bill. Now, that doesn't mean that the council weighing in at this point would be pointless, because remember, the Senate has done nothing with the bill yet. It hasn't even considered it in committee yet. So your weighing in would still be relevant.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting. Ann, I see your hand. Is that? You're muted, Ann.
Sorry. First of all, thank you so much for considering this to the full council. As Drew mentioned, it is being fast-tracked because it was just introduced this spring. It had been in consideration. The study for it has been completed. The land is already in public ownership, owned by the county. And really interesting is the depth of its bipartisan support, in that the congressman that represents that area, Congressman Ken Buck, is the former chairman of the Colorado Republican Party, and he is working in close alliance with our two Democratic senators, Senator Hickenlooper and Bennett, and they are completely aligned on this. And the governor has addressed full support, and it has been fast-tracked for a number of reasons. One is a lot of the descendants who were young adults or children that were there at the time. Their oral histories are being collected through programs at History Colorado and University of Denver. And to be able to achieve this next level of protection would be really helpful. The other part is it's in reaction to the recent Asian American hate crimes and a way of addressing this in a positive way. I would invite you all to come. I would be happy to facilitate a visit to this site. And also notably, for years, the site, which is owned by the county, has been maintained by the local high school and the high school students. And this is a very rural community. So this would be a great economic development for the area as well. So thank you for considering it. It's an incredibly emotional site to visit. And there are existing buildings, a lot of work going on there to protect them. So thank you.
Thank you, Anne. CAC.
Yes, I think this raises an interesting opportunity as well. And that is to really think about BAMIT, or whatever you're calling it, the Build a More Inclusive Preservation Program, and think about other bills that could be out there. For example, the Rosenwald schools are one level of legislation that's out there. I don't know where they sit in sort of this collection of bills or not. Another one is the African-American burial sites that has been proposed. There may be lots of others. And so I think it's useful to think about how you use this opportunity to think about other site-specific pieces of legislation that the council could get behind and why.
Yep, definitely. Thank you. Reno.
Yeah, Jordan, thanks. I think this whole subject is a little touchy and tough, you know, being Indian and seeing that done to our Japanese brothers and sisters, the same that was done to us, and maybe from a different country, but very similar atrocities committed to your own people, Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we always hear the same thing that, you know, it's doomed to repeat history if you don't, you know, understand it and teach it. And then, you know, that's one of the things that the lessons and growing up Kashaya Indian, it's one of the things that we're taught, you know, is just to constantly be learning from the past and, you know, carrying it forward. So I really don't see any downside to the support of this legislation. And, you know, with that being said, Mr. Vice Chairman, if you're ready for a motion, I'd be happy to make that.
Ah, great. Great. Yes. I think we are. So let's see how this vote fares. Is there any more? Well, we can have discussion after we make the motion. So Reno, if you would make the motion, that would be terrific.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded.
Oh. Okay, that was quick. Oh, I think we have to have the motion. I think we have to, Rick, do you have a motion?
Yes, I'm going to read Reno's motion, which I wholeheartedly support and add to.
Great.
And talk about history repeating itself. Here we are, and in the early 60s, Cuba was abandoned, and we're in the same spot again as we were back then. So history does repeat itself. Thank you for saying that, Reno. The motion goes like this. The motion that the ACHP supports the Amatchi National Historic Site Act, Senate 1284, HR 2497, and directs the chairman to advise the Congress of this support.
Okay, do we have a second?
Yes.
Okay, Ann. Okay, Jay, discussion?
Well, I have a question, and maybe Caroline can answer this. What was the result of the study that the National Park Service conducted on this particular site? What was their recommendation?
The special resource study. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Do we know, does anyone know that this is a two-part process? First, the special resource study, then if that says yay, then on to being looked at for a National Park Service property. But Anne, do you know
Oh, yes, sorry. I was trying to raise my hand. Yes, obviously the recommendation that came from it was that it would be best protected as a National Historic Site. Mm-hmm. And there was some discussion about the boundaries, but being in that part of the state, I think the boundary part is really defined by its ownership by the county so that it wouldn't impact any privately held land. Mm-hmm. And also, Reno, you may, obviously aware that with its reference and its name from the beginning to Amachi also ties into the Native American presence in that region and creates an interesting association with the other historic properties and national park units in Southeast Colorado. But the study completely supports the justification for this to be a National Historic Site, if that answers your question in enough depth.
Okay. All right. So Jay, yeah, answering. Okay. Other, Beth?
Caroline, do you have any additional insight to share from the DOI perspective on this?
Just to reiterate what Drew stated, which was that we did ask for some revised language in the bill in a previous version, and that all of our requests have been accommodated.
Okay. Thanks. Other
comments? There's one other comment, if I could make it. This is interesting, and this has been in the dialogue all along, is it's been called at different times Camp Amachi, or Japanese internment. In the what we hear from the leaders, the advocates for this from the Regional Office of the Park Service is to always refer to it as the Grenada Relocation Center, by its official name. And we know that in the legislation, it's Amachi, et cetera. But because it was the association of using the word camp for these kind of sites does not represent the hardships that were inflicted upon the people that were interred there.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for adding that. Okay, here, are there any other comments? Any more discussion? Seeing none and hearing none. Shayla, would you do a roll call vote on this one as well?
Okay. This is motion
keeping
number.
Keeping you busy, Shayla. Keeping
number
you busy.
Number 4, yes. Okay, we'll start at the other end of my list here. Paul Edmondson.
Yes.
Shasta Gaughan.
Yes.
Ramona Bartos.
Yes.
Tony Costa.
Yes.
Kevin Bush.
Abstain.
Teresa Pullman.
Abstain.
Colleen Vaughn or Christopher
Abstain.
Cook? Okay. Richard Kidd.
I'm going to abstain.
Beth Savage.
Abstain.
Caroline Henry.
Abstain.
Brett Blanton.
Abstain.
Mayor Simonson.
Abstain.
Reno Franklin.
Aye.
Jay Vogt.
Aye.
Luke Nichter.
Yes.
Christopher King.
Yes.
Rick Gonzalez.
Yes.
John Finley.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Tannenbaum.
Yes.
Okay. And with 10 votes, the motion passes, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, thanks all. Rick, we've kept you very busy this afternoon. Do you have any other matters to report on before we move on?
No, sir, nothing else.
Okay, thank you. Great job. Let me congratulate you and the entire committee.
Thank you.
Good work. Okay, let's move on now to Section 106 and infrastructure and surface transportation legislation. Let me just acknowledge at the outset that the council has had a longstanding interest in infrastructure and surface transportation, as you know, not only from a policy perspective, as we discussed earlier during the PI's committee report, but also from the vantage point of what we can do to help agencies advance their environmental reviews, very important for such projects. And so I'm going to call on Jay to report on the discussions that the Federal Agency Programs Committee has had about infrastructure and surface transportation to educate all of us, so inform all of us. So Jay, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. The committee discussed how workload could be affected by new infrastructure funding and where Section 106 pinch points might occur for the council, for SHPOs, for THPOs. This returned us to our conversation of the importance of digital records and mapping in support of efficient reviews and decision making. While preservation organizations have advocated for funding for mapping and digitization, the connection to preservation review efficiency is not always well understood. More emphasis from the Advisory Council is needed, particularly when it communicates with Congress on infrastructure legislation. Digitization is not the entire answer. Human resources are also a factor. We must ensure agencies, SHPOs, and THPOs have adequate Section 106 staff. People actually review the projects. It is a capacity involved issue here. Applicant-driven projects, such as broadband expansion, means that there is a need to provide information and training on about Section 106 to those who are unfamiliar with it. The Advisory Council can assist with training and information, including more tailored training for individuals and organizations. However, applicants need to know they need the training. And that's my report.
Great. Okay. I think Christopher Coase has left. I don't see him on here, but Colleen, would you like to make any comments? Or Chris, if you're on here, I missed you, my apologies. Would you like to, Colleen Vaughn, is she with us?
You're on mute,
yes, Colleen. There you are.
I was muted, apologies. And then
That's okay.
Too many different venues for meetings these days. Apologies, Christopher had to leave the meeting. He spoke earlier of, you know, some of the highlights of things that at least DOT is looking at. Within the infrastructure bill itself, there is a huge focus on electric vehicles, especially charging stations. Looking at new areas of formula grants and loan programs that are focused on resiliency, as well as looking at building in resiliency as part of the project delivery process as we move forward, and also focusing, as he said earlier, on environmental justice and equity and ensuring that those areas are touched upon. Right now, that's about all I can speak on those initiatives until they get more finalized and such. But as Teresa spoke earlier, we are also very interested in working with you as we continue to push forward with these initiatives and whatever we can do, working with you to streamline processes in order to get these in place for the as we build back better.
Great, thank you. So I would actually, Colleen, also ask that question of not only you, but of the other federal members here. How can the council best assist agencies in addressing the infrastructure needs? What can we do to help? And from our standpoint, and I'd encourage, I'd love to hear from as many agencies as possible on this issue.
I think some of the things that we spoke of during the FAP meeting last week as well was, you know, identifying additional streamlining measures. We're in a kind of unprecedented times with what we're facing right now and trying to build a more resilient infrastructure and green infrastructure. and what we can do in order to move that forward. And it's also, yeah, the agencies working together. I know other agencies are also looking at electric vehicles, mm-hmm. and that type of building up that type of infrastructure, and what we can do coming together to build some sort of programmatic approach that is a benefit to all of us.
Great.
I think
great.
Teresa has her hand up.
Yes, and let me just, before Teresa, let me just encourage our NICHBO and NATCHBO also to enter this conversation. I'm curious to hear how you feel this can benefit your organizations and your priorities. So Teresa.
I was actually going to kind of emphasize the two parties that you just spoke about. I think that we need to figure out regarding the Section 106 process and, you know, who pays for participation in the Section 106 process. I know that it's not really clear, or it's not clear to me as far as, you know, paying for the work that we get from the SHPOs and the TIPOs. And in regulation, could the ACHP perhaps clarify the regulations and maybe help us with implementing some kind of, you know, payback schedule or whatever is needed for that particular thing? We do know that these offices are often, more often than not staffed enough, not funded enough to handle a lot of the work. We saw that. I was with the government when we had ARRA, and it was the same kind of thing. We were inundating the SHPOs and the TIPOs, and just, you know, if we get this infrastructure bill passed, and if we, that, you know, the federal agencies do happen to get money, then, you know, we're going to need to think of something really quickly to help these other folks that are in need of financial and you know, personnel. So just wanted to overemphasize that too.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, as I said. Reed, you're next.
Yeah, I just love following Teresa on those points, because I think they're great points. I think one of the things we could easily do, it might be welcome at the moment, is for us to remind folks of the 2015 plan and the guidance that came out of it that this council endorsed about reimbursements in the Section 106 review process, sort of, you know, where are those opportunities for agencies to assist SHPOs and TIPOs, and we issued guidance, I think, about 3 years after that on that. We also have a Section 106 success story that talks about how agencies worked, in this case, with the California SHPO to fund positions within the SHPO. And maybe we could package those together and share those with folks, just to, you know, spur thinking and talking to some extent. The other thing that I just wanted to acknowledge, and Teresa, we appreciated already having a conversation with some of the folks from DHS about charging stations. And I know that there are, you know, there's sort of a wide mandate for much of the federal fleet to move to electronic vehicles, and that they're going to require charging stations across the country. I think one of the things that I suggested when we had a discussion with some of your folks was that perhaps the FPO forum or some other grouping of FPOs may want to get together and sort of compare notes and ask, you know, which, you know, are there programs that sort of touch more than one of us? And might we sort of, you know, lock arms together and then start a discussion with the council, with NICHBO, with NATHBO about what a program alternative might look like? Thanks.
Great. Thanks.
I'm sorry, but I think, Reed, we also need to bring the Department of Energy into the conversation as well, because they, along with GSA, are going to be key partners for all of us federal agencies, you know, across the space. So yeah, definitely welcome that opportunity. Yeah.
The more the merrier.
Great. And now we're going to hear from NATPO. Shasta.
Yes, thank you. And Teresa, thank you for talking about the difficulty with funding and the expectations that are so high, especially for TIPOs who may not have the bandwidth, and not just TIPOs, but tribes without TIPOs, but that still have the right to consult under Section 106. So, you know, I would just say that you know, NAFPA would certainly support having something in place to help fill those gaps and make sure that tribes are able to respond in the way that they want to be able to respond. And, you know, I can't speak for all tribes. I can at least say for Paula that we are obviously in support of improving and expanding infrastructure, especially for things like bringing broadband to tribal communities. But the 106 is going to take a lot of effort. And so thanks for helping us with that.
Great. And Eric.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to note that certainly states, and I really appreciate this conversation, states certainly could use assistance in doing this. And thank you, Reed, for bringing up the example in California, and when agencies have been able to provide support for detailees or other types of employees to help get projects through, it's been very successful. But I'm going to do something a little unusual and actually mention that it's not just the states and tribes that need the resources. I would like our federal agencies to kind of look inward and realize that you guys need them too, because our members will be really quick to tell you that the best outcomes are achieved when agencies themselves have the resources and the staff that they need to process the applications, to educate their permit applicants and the public on what the process is. And the most time that SHPOs spend and the biggest suck of resources are when they have to educate inexperienced agencies that have one person dedicated to doing environmental review, and when applicants are stepping into a process that they have absolutely no preparation for and no guidance. So that is an area where I think really great benefits could be gained.
Great, thank you, Eric. Okay, I don't see any more. And that one thing I just want to bring the discussion back to one item that that Jay mentioned, and that was the area of digitization, and we've talked about that. We had a task force that came out that I headed that came out with recommendations, and I'm wondering, and I know having talked to Reed and Jay, they would like to focus on that issue in particular and send a letter to Congress talking about the importance of investing in digitization as it relates to the infrastructure and its impact on historic properties. So Jay, I believe that you have a motion that you would like to suggest to the council, to the members.
Mr. Acting Chairman, thank you. I move that the Vice Chairman convey to Congress the importance of digital information to facilitate efficient review of infrastructure projects and urge the Congress to include resources in infrastructure legislation to support the development of digital tools and information available at the state and tribal levels to better inform and facilitate the federal project planning process.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
This is Ramona. I'll second that.
Okay. Thank you, Ramona. Okay, discussion of this item.
This is Jay. Just want to emphasize that, you know, digitization is key for some of this process, as well as for the federal agencies to be able to get the information they need as they prepare their applications for Section 106 review, and then the making sure that we have the staffing in place, as Eric mentioned, both at the federal agency level as well as in the states and tribes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Other comments? Okay. Hearing no and seeing no further discussion, Shayla, I think this is the last time we're going to call on you, but let's do the roll call and see where we stand.
Okay. Motion number 5, John Finley.
Yes.
Rick Gonzalez.
Rick?
Oh, Rick is muted.
Rick, you're muted.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Christopher King.
I'm exhausted. It's been a long meeting.
Rick, Chris, Christopher.
Mr. King? Yes. Luke Nichter.
Yes.
Jay Vogt.
Yes.
Reno Franklin.
Yes.
Mayor Simpson.
Yes.
Brett Blanton.
Yes.
Caroline Henry.
Abstain.
Beth Savage.
Abstain.
Richard Kidd.
I'm going to vote opposed to this. Thank you.
Colleen Vaughn.
Abstain.
Teresa Pullman.
Abstain.
Kevin Bush.
Abstain.
Tony Costa.
Abstain.
Ramona Bartos.
Yes, with great enthusiasm.
Shasta Gaughan.
Yes.
Paul Edmondson.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Tannenbaum.
Yes.
Okay, and Mr. Vice Chairman, that motion passes.
Okay, all right.
Affirmative.
Yeah, great. Shayla, thank you for all your help with these roll calls. Really appreciate that. Thanks to all. And let's move on now, Jay, to some of the action plans that you and the Office of Federal Agency Programs have been working on digitization, as we just talked about, the Section 3 report, leveraging historic buildings report. I think you guys have really been busy and done a terrific job. Let me commend you on that wonderful, on the wonderful work that you've done. And if you could give us a brief report on those action plans, we'd appreciate that.
Well, thank you. For the purpose of brevity, my report will be brief. The staff reported to the committee that they are continuing to implement the recommendations of each of the three reports. There is a lot going on right now. And some of the more prominent action items are appropriately waiting for the arrival of the new chair. So as soon as she is confirmed by the Senate and in place, we'll be able to implement more. We plan to remain open to advice from members on new opportunities developing within the administration. So any assistance and information you can provide would be greatly appreciated. And that's my report.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other reports that you're holding out on us?
I am holding out on one more report.
Oh, go ahead. Let us have it. Yes. Good.
As you recall, former Chairman Giorgiani established a panel of members to review and consider recommendations for improving the program comment development process without amending the regulations as more agencies consider Section 106 efficiencies through this program alternative. And of course, program alternatives is things that we actually have been visited about today. The panel is led by me, including Reno Franklin and Tony Costa, who's with the Veterans Administration. We have considered the input from the membership in formulating a set of recommendations that should help improve transparency and predictability in the process of developing program comments while protecting historic resources. Now, in May, the panel asked for some additional feedback on a draft set of recommendations from key stakeholders, including NICSHPO, NATHPO, the National Trust, and the FPOs. Their input has been integrated into the proposed final set of recommendations that the panel is finalizing before we convey to you, Mr. Vice Chairman, in the near future, those recommendations. Now, as I understand it, these recommendations do not need to be voted on by the council, that it will be something that will be considered by leadership. And that is it from the Federal Agency Programs Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Jay. Okay, let's move on to Native American Affairs and Reno Franklin. Take it away.
Trying to unmute myself there, which is never an easy process, unfortunately, although some people would probably disagree with that. So, Jordan, we had a very active and productive committee. And let me just quickly run through the notes. We don't have any action items for you. So I guess that's probably a good thing. I got to be honest, I can't remember a time where we've had this many motions inside of one meeting. So if anybody ever says, Jordan, don't get things done, well, this is being recorded.
Great. Thank you, Reno.
Yeah. So you know, just during our committee, we did discuss quite a bit climate change, and climate resiliency strategies, and took a look at the 30 by 30, now coined as the America the Beautiful initiative. And had some comments and some discussions on that, and then you know we dove into the traditional knowledge information that you know just the feedback from staff that was given to us from tribes has just been super positive, and we were really happy to hear that. Really happy to hear that the administration is interested in the work that's been done around that, and that you know we will continue to work on. Building off of the paper that has already been done and submitted and build out a more useful tool for that. They have staff has begun working on formal guidance. We'll consult with our federal, tribal, and Hawaiian partners. And again, you know, we're also looking for ways to better engage those who are in the territories who benefit from this as well, when we're looking at, you know, traditional knowledge and how federal agencies who interact with indigenous peoples can use that as a tool to help them and assist them in doing that in a better way, right? We're always trying to better ourselves, and certainly tribes are trying to better the way that we speak to federal agencies as well. So I think this, we'll do it together. We are partnering with the EPA's Office of Environmental Justice to host two webinars on traditional knowledge. Really happy about that. Excited. And hats off to the EPA for asking us, you know, to do that. The first one's mid-September. We'll focus on federal agency work with traditional knowledge. And I will serve as the indigenous voice to talk about how important it is for federal agencies to respect the work of TK. I'm pretty busy. And so when I was looking at my notes for the meeting and kind of going over it and rehearsing, that was when I realized that I had volunteered to do that or been voluntold. So I mean, so Valerie communicates with me because she knows I'm so busy sometimes. She sneaks it into my talking points and waits for me to text her back. I agree to what? But really happy to be doing that. This is just, you know, again, TK is so important to tribes, you know, and especially for those of you that understand California Indian culture, as you know, and the roundhouse culture that I'm a part of, Boli Maru religion, you know, we recently put our center pole back up, and you know, after the mourning the loss of our roundhouse leader, and so you know, the way the process that we did that, you know, the waiting for 2 years to do it was all part of that traditional knowledge that is never to be written down, but something that we were happy to share bits and pieces as we're allowed to with everybody else. And so when we talk about TK, it resonates. What, not only does it resonate with me, but I'm living it every single day. So are my kids. And then the second webinar will focus on indigenous perspectives, and will be held in mid-October. And that one will include both tribal and Hawaiian voices. So I didn't see that I was signed up for that because I am both a tribal and a Hawaiian voice, but I'm sure that Val is going to sneak that into some talking points and I'll find out that way too. So other than that, you know, we want to welcome back Ira who came back to work for the ACHP again and has been absolved of all of his possible wrongdoings of leaving us in the first place. And then, you know, Native American Affairs Committee, I want to thank all of our committee members, and then especially our staff that worked so hard to get us all prepared. I don't think we do that enough. And I also want to acknowledge the hard work of Reed, who has stepped in to fill that interim position and is doing a heck of a job doing that as well. So, Mr. Vice Chairman, that's the report out from the Native American Affairs Committee.
Terrific. Thank you, Reno. Excellent report, as always. And moving on to the communications, education, and outreach, Luke, for your report, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Once again, you have saved the best for last. And I'm keeping my eye on the hour here, 3:35, so I'll try to move right along. You know, I think at the outset, I want to also acknowledge our own committee members and especially the CEO staff, Susan, Lynn, Shayla, and Patricia, you know, who really carry such a consistently heavy workload. Never complain, or at least very rarely, and almost always do it with a smile. Well, during our committee meeting, in addition to points covering ACHP outreach with C-SPAN and also Latinos and Heritage Conservation, the three items that were composed most of our agenda, the one that is kind of coming up the closest for action or a recommendation to ACHP members is the one on the agenda today. As members recall, the Communications Education and Outreach Committee has offered a series of webinars this past year directed towards students at historically Black colleges and university, as well as students at minority-serving institutions. And really with the point of getting more young people in the preservation pipeline, you know, at an early age. You know, we've all seen in our own work how web conferencing has changed our lives in the past year and has allowed agencies like the ACHP to reach new audiences. The CEO committee proposes that these webinars in some shape or form become a permanent part of ACHP outreach going forward, along with other such platforms, which include podcasts. To provide background, CEO has offered today four of these webinars. You know, there are more details in the attached paper with your agenda packet today, but I'd like to offer at least now sort of a thumbnail sketch of what these have been. So to date, 304 people have registered for the four webinars with a total attendance of 93. We have had students from a large variety of HBCUs participating, including students from other institutions, including Tulane, Syracuse, Georgia State, University of Georgia, Indiana, University of Houston, University of Texas, and Texas Tech. We've also had representatives from the Federal Railroad Administration and the U.S. Agency for Global Media. During the CEO discussion at our committee meeting last week, now, the committee came up with some great options for the future, considering new topics, new audiences. We discussed climate change as one, a theme that hasn't been a major feature yet in our webinars. And obviously there's lots of angles there, certainly that we could pursue in light of some of our other discussion today of this of the topic. Also, we've discussed historic sites related to Black Lives Matter and civil rights, historic sites related to Latinx and Asian American Pacific Islander sites, Native American sites, and other suggestions like the one from CAC Slick about how the process of how we record sites important to society that become eligible for the National Register. Additionally, the suggestion was made to launch a series of webinars on everything from careers in historic preservation, other or related fields, featuring speakers really from a cross section of disciplines that contribute to preservation, including archaeologists, preservationists, SHPOs, TIPOs, et cetera, as well as the idea for a webinar directed towards the military service academies. We'd also like to get input from Latinos in Heritage Conservation, since two of their directors of the LHC attended our committee meeting last week and also had a lot of great ideas for us. In addition, Ann Walker stated that it's important to hear from students. You know, let's hear what students want. We're targeting young people. Let's see what it is that gets young people the most excited, you know, about the subject and about their future in terms of their career goals going forward. And so we plan to send an email to all of the 304 who registered for the webinars to ask them what they'd like to hear from us about in the future. And so the point of the agenda today is really to kind of circle back with members and for those who attended the meeting or didn't attend the meeting who might like to add anything or any ideas going forward. You know, as we conclude in the attached paper, which I hope you'll have time to read, you know, we don't necessarily propose any action today with the feedback we've received to date. In addition to any possible feedback today, you know, our goal is to bring perhaps a final proposal to the membership during the fall business meeting. And so with that, I'll kind of pause for any kind of discussion. And then if we have time, I can do a quick roundup on our other agenda items that we discussed last week.
I'd just like to start by saying congratulations to Luke. I've never heard anybody talk so quickly in my life. Excellent job.
Hopefully not too quickly.
No, you got it all in though.
Any other? Well, I'll comment and say I'm really impressed by what the committee, what your committee has accomplished, and congratulations to all. And Luke, you had there no other discussion. You've had some other items that we discussed before that you want to mention?
I did, yeah. I can kind of give a brief summary of our other two agenda items. And if I have any gaps here, I'll let the CEO staff fill in here. We also had two directors from the Latinos and Heritage Conservation attend and really give us a dynamic overview of their organization and just all the projects that they're involved in. In particular, the reason they were invited to take part in our committee meeting is this again is really a part of the ACHP's commitment to the principles of inclusiveness and through the building of a more inclusive preservation initiative. And we received a briefing of their major initiatives, such as the Abuelas Project, an effort to document historic sites significant to the Latinx community, something it seemed to me, as I commented during the committee meeting, could easily be expanded to a nationwide project and be really a highly innovative project, which I think is what they have in mind, incorporating GIS mapping data and really be highly visual and interactive. And in addition to that, we brainstormed while they were with us and discussed ways that our organizations, the ACHP and the LHC, might be able to work together more closely in the future. We came up with the possible collaboration, as I mentioned before, on webinar topics. Here we can focus on webinar topics on the Latinx community. There's no reason why we should limit ourselves just to HBCUs. We talked about possibly having an intern in the fall from the LHC to kind of, the terms come up a lot today, cross-pollinate. And the more that we can do that between the two organizations and support each other's missions, possibly joint social media campaign in the fall and winter. And another important item came up during discussion was doing a better job of spreading word about the 106 process to the Latinx community. Seemed really important. And I think that point resonated with both of our organizations. And so I think, like the webinars, this is going to be something that members will hear more about in the future, certainly our fall business meeting. And we're like the webinars, I think CEO is very interested in getting ideas and feedback that members might have. And I think I'll move right into kind of quick summary of our third item, and if there's any discussion at the end, we can kind of take them all together. And our third item on our meeting was we're looking at building a new relationship with C-SPAN, the public affairs cable channel in Washington. And in particular, what we'd like to do, members, some are aware and some may not be, I was formerly the executive producer at C-SPAN, hired by Brian Lamb to start the American Artifacts Program, which is part of the American History TV series, which is on C-SPAN 3 every weekend. And the one program in particular is sort of a flagship for the series, American Artifacts. And the concept behind the weekly program is kind of taking viewers behind the scenes to an archive, a museum, or historic site, and showing them something that might include what a normal member of the visiting public might see, but often has a kind of behind the scenes element. So something visual for TV that tells a kind of compelling human story, often at a historic site. That's been many of them are 106 success stories and other possible ones. I said during the committee meeting, I could easily foresee a C-SPAN program just featuring just on the ACHP itself, its role, its function, its history. And so our goal here in CEO is to begin to build a relationship with C-SPAN, whether it be suggesting sites that we're particularly proud of that have been success stories in terms of preservation. They have done a program before at the Builder Museum, but not one on the ACHP that I know of. So our goal is to begin to build a relationship with the network and its viewers who are already, I think, naturally historically minded, who are a good match for the ACHP's mission. And so I think that was the third of our three points. And I think in our remaining time, if there are any questions or discussion items, we're just as we did last week in our committee meeting, we'd love to have your feedback and you'll be hearing from us again on these points.
Okay, anyone comment on that excellent report.
And if there's some rule that says we can't dismiss early, I can just keep talking for.
No. I think we'll give a little time back to everybody. But thank you, Luke. That was a great report. Really terrific. Very comprehensive. Before we go on to new business, which isn't very long.
I do see a couple hands too, by the way.
Oh, you did see hands?
I see. I think Caroline and then Reed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry, please Caroline.
Start with Caroline, please. Yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted to say quickly that it recently came to my attention that something of a pilot program is being started with the Association for Preservation Technology. APT is working with some high schools to stand up a class or a program on preservation specifically for inner city and or underserved community type high schools. And a pilot is going to be starting on that. That's about all I know about it, except that I just want to put it on the radar as one to watch.
Thank you, Caroline. Reed.
And I actually have a few words on other matters, so I'll yield in case anyone has any further comments on Luke's fine report. Let me just say, though, too, that I very much appreciated the meeting that Luke ran. It was a great discussion. Yeah.
I just have one. And Luke, in addition to celebrating in addition to commemorating the 250th anniversary, it is also that 2026 is the 60th anniversary of the National Historic Preservation Act. So we can start to begin to think about how we might, putting on my fundraiser cap, how we might put that into the hopper and come out with some creative ideas.
That's right. A great idea, Mr. Vice Chairman. We had talked, you know, of course, this is the 55th. And you know, we kind of initially brainstormed, you know, could we do something for this? But it just with, you know, the gradual openness and the timetable that we talked about at the outset of the meeting, you know, with the partners like the LBJ Library, it just was a little bit, you know, too early to pull something together so quickly.
Yeah. Great.
60th sounds better than 55th.
Right. There you go.
I'd like to add one last thing, and that is to say that for those of you who attended the CEO meeting and heard about the Abuelas Project and program that Latinos in Heritage Conservation are going to be doing, which is really outstanding, they received funding from the National Trust for Historic Preservation to do that. And I just think that was amazing. So we owe the National Trust a big thank you for that as well.
Yeah, I should add that, you know, for any grant giving agency, you know, this project has legs. And this, I could easily see how, you know, I mean, not just the National Trust, but I would think NEH. I mean, this is an incredible project that could easily be expanded nationwide. And so I say to the National Trust, you'll probably be hearing from them again in the future.
Great. All right, Reed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I would be remiss if I didn't also mention, along with the fact, as I said earlier, that Tom McCulloch retired a few weeks ago, that we have another one of our cherished staff that is moving on from our agency. Sarah Stokely, who I think is on today, is also leaving the ACHP shortly, and she's taking a position in the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. So we wish Sarah the best and thank her for all of her years of service with us. And I also just wanted to acknowledge too that as I mentioned the recruitment process that we're undertaking for an assistant director within the Office of Federal Agency Programs, that Jamie Leuschinger is single-handedly acting as the assistant director for both sections right now and will be for the next couple of months until we have a new person on board. So I wanted to just express my appreciation to Jamie for doing that as well, and just acknowledge those two other staff changes. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Reed. Okay, on to new business, which is simply that we still hope, this is one item, we hope that our next meeting will be held in November. We're planning that, but we don't have a specific date yet. We need to coordinate with Professor Bronin and find out about her schedule. So as soon as we know what that is, you will know what it is. And before I move on to my final act here, I wanted to thank a lot of folks. I want to thank the members and the Observers, members of the council, thank all of you for your participation, which I asked for at the beginning, and we certainly got, for your contributions and for your patience with this newly minted vice chair who is serving as acting chair. So thank you, thank you. I want to thank the committee chairs and who gave excellent reports. Rick, Jay, Luke, you know, terrific reports. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I want to thank Javier for his tutelage on running a meeting and the props that I have right by me here. Terrific advice and counsel there. A very special thanks to Reed for, as Rick knows, Reed is at the fulcrum of everything. And Reed, thank you for preparing me so well for this meeting. Really appreciate that. You are such a special resource to the council. And moving on to including you now in a larger thank you, and because I was a member of the staff for a decade and can appreciate what they have to deal with and what they do, I want to just give a big shout out to the most outstanding, excellent staff that I've ever worked with. You are terrific. You've done a great job on all your accomplishments. It is a pleasure to be able to work with you. So thank you. Thanks to all of you. And now, is there any further business? Wouldn't expect that there would be at this point. So hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. And you've got 7 minutes. Thank you all. Very productive. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.